Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Carrick. On May 17, 2021, the Supreme Court decided Coniglia v. Strom. The issue is whether the community caretaking exception to the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement extends to the home. In a 9-0 opinion authored by Justice Thomas, the court vacated the ruling of the Court of Appeals for the First Circuit and remanded the case. The Supreme Court held, quote, "Neither the holding nor the logic of Cady v. Dombrowski justifies the removal of Edward Coniglia's firearms from his home by police officers under a community caretaking exception to the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement." Chief Justice Roberts filed a concurring opinion, in which Justice Breyer joined. Justices Alito and Kavanaugh also filed concurring opinions. Robert Frommer, senior attorney at the Institute for Justice, joins us to discuss this decision and its implications.
For those of you who might not be familiar with Coniglia, let me give you a brief backdrop as to the facts of the case. And it's pretty interesting how from a very small incident, a very large decision can grow. This case really starts with a domestic squabble. Edward Coniglia and his wife were sitting around talking really arguing at dinner. And Edward, frustrated, went into one of his rooms, grabbed an unloaded weapon, put it down, and said, "Why don't you just put me out of my misery?" Well, surprise, surprise, that did not somehow make the argument go any better. They continued to argue. Eventually, Mrs. Coniglia left and decided to spend the night at a hotel. She tries to call the next morning to talk to Mr. Coniglia. She can't get him. So she's slightly worried and wants officers to come do a check at the home just to make sure everybody's okay. So they get there. They see Mr. Coniglia. They start talking to him. The officers think he seems fine. They don't note that he seems suicidal or despondent in any way. They were still, concerned about the possibility he might harm himself. So they wanted to take him to the hospital for a psychological evaluation. And now Mr. Coniglia said, "Okay, I'll go with you, but on the condition that you don't go into my house and take my guns." And the police said to him, "Okay, we won't do that." But as soon as they left, don't you know, the officers went to Ms. Coniglia and said to her, "Oh, well, your husband authorized us to take the weapons." So she led them through the house where they discovered the guns and took them. Well, Mr. Coniglia was soon out of the hospital and came home to find that his guns were missing. And then he went to the police and said to them, "Can you give me my guns back?" And they refused. And that's what kicked off this litigation. Really, the question here is whether the government was able to enter Mr. Coniglia's house and take those weapons without a warrant and without what would be considered exigent circumstances. Importantly, while this case was being litigated, the government eschewed any kind of argument that this was justifiable as like an exigent circumstance or pursuant to the emergency aid doctrine. Well, that didn't really matter to the First Circuit. The First Circuit held that the officer's actions were valid under what was known as the community caretaking doctrine. This is a doctrine that first arose in a case called Cady versus Dombrowski, where they said, you know, officers have to deal with a lot of sort of non-law enforcement everyday activities. In Cady, it was about a towed vehicle. And the First Circuit reasoned, well, if the officers have to deal with all these non-law enforcement activities, then some of those are going to include the home. And so long as the officer does not have a law enforcement purpose, is not trying to detect or investigate crime, and they think it's reasonable for them to enter based on the facts they know, then that's enough. That's what the community and in fact, the First Circuit, in upholding the use of the community caretaker doctrine for the home, joined a number of other circuits, including the Eighth Circuit and many other state courts, in extending this community caretaker doctrine to the home. So Mr. Coniglia files for cert. It's granted, and it comes up. The case is argued, and I think we're going to talk a little bit about that argument, some of the things that came out of that argument a little bit. But this case was argued just a couple months ago, and so the decision yesterday was a very fast turnaround. And I think that you can understand that, given that this was a unanimous decision of the court authored by Justice Thomas. It's really an incredibly short and to the point opinion. The court was not messing around. This is one of the shortest majority opinions, frankly, I've ever seen. In that majority opinion, Justice Thomas, for the court, lays out the ways in which the police can traditionally enter someone's home or the curtilage. And the court notes, well, the most obvious one is a warrant. The second one is that they can enter private property without a warrant when there are certain exigent circumstances exist. And they also pointed out that also police officers can enter based on consent or just on the customs of society. This goes back to the Florida versus Jardines decision from 2013, where the Supreme Court said it'd be perfectly fine for an officer to walk up to your front door, just like anyone else can do. But what he can't do is bring a drug sniffing dog up there, because that changes the nature of the search. So we have a warrant, we have exigent circumstances, and we have consent or the customs of society. And then the court goes on to say that what the First Circuit did, and those other circuits and high courts that blessed the extension of the community caretaker doctrine, they exceeded all proper bounds. And what they focused on, I think the key part of the court's decision in Coniglia, is it stresses the constitutional differences between the facts in Cady and the facts that are here. And I talked about that a little bit, most notably that Cady involved a car that was involved in an accident. The car got in an accident, it was inoperable. It had to be towed and taken to a lot. And there it was during the course of the inventory search that they found the weapon. So police frequently need to deal with broken down vehicles. That was a large part of the holding in Cady. And in Cady, the court expressly noted that the community caretaking language there was referring to dealing with disabled vehicles on public highways. Now, that's a lot different than what we have here, because this isn't a broken down car on the side of the road. This is someone inside their own home. And what the court said is, like, in this situation, there's not those same kind of public-facing non-law enforcement duties here that exist in Cady. And it concluded the decision, again, very short decision, I think total of 4 pages, that saying that the existence of a community caretaking functions, the fact that police might have to do tow vehicles on the road or search vehicles that are inoperable on the road as part of that towing, does not mean that the government has an open-ended license to perform those community caretaking functions anywhere. So the court was again stressing, we will allow warrantless searches when they are needed. They are needed for these public cars, you know, broken down cars in the public right of way. They aren't needed for the home. So again, this opinion is very short and very powerful. And there are several initial thoughts that came from it. Now, one thing is that the majority opinion is very short, but there's several concurrences, which we'll be talking about in a moment. But I think that one striking thing is the unanimity here. The members of the court clearly recognize sort of the open-ended nature of the community caretaker doctrine as articulated by the First Circuit. And that really came out in argument, actually, where I think it was Chief Justice Roberts asked the lawyer for the government whether the police could enter someone's private property, their backyard, in order to get a cat out of the tree. And the government lawyer immediately said, sure, that would be fine, because it seems like a very minimal intrusion, and it seems like it could benefit the public in some way. And it's that kind of open-ended balancing inquiry in the mind of the officer on the beat that I think gave the court great pause. After all, the Fourth Amendment is really established to protect our persons and our property. It's supposed to make sure that the rules and the rights that we have are akin to those that our forefathers had when they came from England. And a large part of that meant that we don't give discretion to the officer on a beat. We like the warrant process because it interposes a neutral person between the member of the public, you know, a citizen who has Fourth Amendment rights, against the power of the state. So when it realized that the community caretaking doctrine would create a warrantless path by which the officers could enter, it realized it didn't want any part of that. Now, it's important, like I said, that this opinion will have a broad impact, because there have been several circuits and numerous state high courts that have endorsed the use of the community caretaking doctrine in homes. And since the Fourth Amendment and the decisions of the United States Supreme Court serve as the floor to our rights, that means all of those decisions are no longer good law, which I think is ultimately to the good. Because as you might already appreciate, there's a great concern in the body of the Fourth Amendment about discretion in officers, and the kind of warrantless police entries that an affirmance here would have allowed would mean there are a lot more times when officers would just be breaking into people's houses. And since it's those kinds of entries that often provoke violence, you know, this holding should improve both security for our rights and hopefully public safety as well. Now, also, I think it's important to note here that in Coniglia, it seems that the court is doing some broader meta points. It seems like it's going out of its way to set the table, to sort of lay out a list. Remember early on, I said that there were three ways the court said police could get into someone's home: a warrant, exigent and circumstances, and consent. And by saying that, explaining when the police can get into a home, it pushes back against that free-floating reasonableness analysis that underlies the community caretaking doctrine. The idea that, oh, we'll just let the officer in his mind decide whether the social costs and benefits, if it's reasonable for his actions. The court's opinion very clearly rejects that free-floating reasonableness analysis, and in fact, members, justices on the court were very concerned about that and the breadth of it during argument. And that kind of free-floating reasonableness analysis, the idea that what's reasonable is just whatever in our mind is reasonable, really is not what the best reading of reasonable means in the Fourth Amendment. The best research actually suggests that whether a search is reasonable or not is not really based on our modern view of whether we think it's a good idea or not, but really about whether it was consistent with the principles of the common law, sort of those broad principles that were established at the time of the Fourth Amendment that were meant to protect persons and property. So that's the real standard. It's not a free-floating whatever we happen to think today might be reasonable, but it's really more about, is this consistent with the broad principles that are that motivated the Fourth Amendment, the idea of warrantless action by government or overly broad warrants, trying to interpose a neutral magistrate between us and the state, and, of course, a very broad protection for our persons and property. So in some ways, the court's rejection of this free-floating balancing test, it actually echoes back in this Fourth Amendment context. It actually echoes back to, well, at this point, close to a decade-old opinion in United States versus Stevens. Now, that's an old First Amendment case from, I want to say, 2009 or 2010 that involved animal cruelty. And the government there did something very interesting. It tried to argue that to the court that the court should adopt a test by which it decides whether speech is protected or not based on sort of an ad hoc balancing of its social costs and its social benefits. And the court in Stevens completely rejected that approach. And it said, no, that is not how we do it. That's not how the Constitution works. There are certain historical categories of speech that are unprotected. Otherwise, you get protection. And that's exactly what I see the court doing here in Coniglia, rejecting this broad-based reasonableness analysis and saying, look, there, under the common law, under Fourth Amendment traditions, there are three ways you can get into the home: consent, a warrant, or accident circumstances. We're not going to be inventing a fourth, especially one that allows such free-floating analysis by the officer on the beat. Now, this is all to the good, but I will say that I had one slight concern from the opinion in Coniglia. And it's this continued fidelity to the idea that the home is first among equals for Fourth Amendment purposes. You see this a lot. This is frequently brought up, and it has a certain surface level appeal, because after all, the home is, most of us think of the home as like our place of privacy. So it's not the home is important because it's the home, but because it's the place where people withdraw into their private lives, where they want to be secure in their private lives, where they want to hold their property. So the home is at the core of the Fourth Amendment because it exists as a place of security and refuge. And for most people, it is the focal point of that place of security and refuge. But of course, we use other places for those same purposes. For instance, we contract with others to rent spaces, to store things. Those places are, from a basic perspective of property and contract law, they're just as much ours as our home, and we treat them that exact same way. Now, the question is the fidelity to the home that we see here in Coniglia going to be extended to other forms of property that are maybe under assault? So, for instance, if you own if you rent a storage place or a security deposit box, do you have Fourth Amendment rights in those? And will those Fourth Amendment rights be vindicated and guarded just as closely as your Fourth Amendment rights with regard to your home? Because at the end of the day, whether you keep your most precious things in your house or in a safety deposit box, you ultimately want that security. And that's what the Fourth Amendment is supposed to guarantee.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.